Hey guys, it's Chris here. Wanted to let you know that today's episode is powered by mybookie.ag. You go on over to mybookie.ag and put in the promo code TARPSOFFSEASON. That's S-Z-N or S-Z-N if you're in Canada, but it's not about the Z's. It's all about the cheese. We will give you a 100% deposit bonus on every dollar you deposit up to $1,000. You put in 20, you'll get 40. You put in 40, you'll get 80. You put in $69, you'll get $138. You don't just have to bet hockey. You can bet the NFL, MLB, NBA, presidential election, hot dog eating contests, you name it. You can bet it. And we're going to give you a 100% deposit bonus at mybookie.ag when you hit tarps off season, S-Z-N. That's tarps off season, S-Z-N. Now let's get to the episode.
This is Jerome McGinley, and you're listening to Get the Puck Out.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Get the Puck Out. I'm your host, Chris Mancuso, and today Jack and I are joined by two-time Memorial Cup champion, former draft pick of the Carolina Hurricanes, Justin Shug. What's going on, Justin?
Not much, fellas. Just living my life in Denmark currently and playing hockey here and raising a family.
Yeah, buddy. That's incredible. So let's talk about the different leagues. Obviously, you played a couple games in the NHL. You got to play in Canada, too, for them, which was really cool. And then, you know, life in Charlotte. Like, you go, you play in the AHL in Charlotte. What was it like playing hockey in Charlotte? Like, that's a pretty beautiful place.
You know what? Oh, Bank of America moved their headquarters there, and it created 400,000 jobs, and it just turned the city into a metropolis. People from all over U.S. were moving there, and it was a young city. It was a great city to play in. The Carolina Panthers were buzzing. That's when Cam Newton brought the squad to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And hockey wasn't. Yeah, it was a great time. The city also had a AAA baseball team move downtown. So it was just a hop. It was a hop in city every week. And it really shaped me to who I am today. I mean, a big topic of conversation right now is Black Lives Matter. And it was the first time for me going to the east side of Charlotte where you really did feel that that presence of black, white community. And I'll never forget the first time I went into a all-black slushy bar, and I wheel into this place. It's called Wet Willie's. I'm with three other teammates, and we go in, and there's slushies. There's vodka slushies, rum slushies, about 50 different slushies all spinning with different alcohol in it. And we wheeled in there, and we're the only four white guys in the bar. And it was the first time that I actually had felt racism in my life. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's a memory I'll have forever.
Jesus, yeah, man. I mean, for sure. It's definitely like a polarizing topic in that. And like you said, that's like such a place that has a strong sense of community. But then you go over and you spend some time playing in overseas. I want to ask you, I know you played, 33 games in the KHL? Is it like as Wild West as people make it sound over here? Or what was that like? What's that shit like?
Fuck Russia, man. Black's white and white is black. I think that's the best way I can. but to be honest, I think if you compare North American hockey, whether it's transactions, salary cap, anything to Europe or Russia, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, as a player, you don't know what anyone else is making. You don't know what's in someone else's contract over here. And that's normal. Whether you believe it's a good thing or not, it's just the way it is. And it's different when you first come over here as a North American to not know all that public information, but it's just the way it is. It's the wild, wild west.
So you're in Denmark now.
Wow, so the contracts there are not public. I had no idea about that.
Wild. That's wild. Well,
yeah,
you can't
go onto a site like Cap Friendly or I think the older one was Cap Geek at the time, and pretty much you can get any information on most leagues in North America actually, and over here, yeah, it's not really a topic of conversation. There's a lot of hush-hush.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's not necessarily a bad thing, though. I mean, it probably takes away a lot of those animosities that can happen because, I mean, no matter what, when you're teammates and stuff, like, that stuff's going to happen. Someone's going to get a little rubbed the wrong way or something, especially if they have a contract coming up and they feel like maybe the team should have negotiated with them first, or this guy gets this amount of money and a signing bonus, why don't I get that? I guess it kind of eliminates that craziness from it. But let's talk about some of the old stuff. You were on the two-time Memorial Cup champion Windsor Spitfires. You started out in Oshawa, didn't you?
And then I got drafted to Oshawa. Got drafted to Oshawa and then made a decision that I wasn't going to go into camp, and I was actually thinking about going to Yale or Harvard at the time. So I was late to attend camp, and I thought it would have been a great opportunity to get a education. And then once I saw a couple of the buddies I had played with go on to camp, and I just had a gut feeling, hey, like, I got to play in the OHL. It's going to be the best for my development. Go there as a 15-year-old, and 3 months later, January 2nd hits, and I get called into the coach's office, and I get traded. And by this time, I've played, I think it was maybe 20 games or so in Oshawa, barely playing, finding my way really around the league, just started to enter maybe all the buildings and just trying to get comfortable home away from home. And then I get traded. And I just started bawling in the coach's office. I didn't know what to expect going to a different team. Just a young little kid not knowing what's going on, changing schools. And that was the first time I packed my suitcase up and changed teams and changed location. So it's not my last time, and it still probably won't be my last time in my career. So I've lived out of many suitcases.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's insane. But you end up going to Windsor. You play alongside Taylor Hall and Adam Henrique, and you guys had such success there. What was it like, you know, playing alongside those guys? And, I mean, you guys were probably the most dominant line in that entire probably Canadian Hockey League for a couple of years there. That must have been exhilarating once you kind of came through being like a 15-year-old kid getting traded and then ending up, you know, with all the success that you had.
Yeah, so when I got there, there was a handful of us that were all born in 91, and Halsey and Henny, I had the opportunity to play with them and ride shotgun with them at last Memorial Cup run, and two great hockey players, obviously, and extremely skilled, world-class talent. But I mean, we could go through both of those teams, and I can pretty much say every single player on those teams served a great purpose and a great role to capture those titles. I mean, those were grinds of years, 100 games or so a year. But to circle back to my opportunity there, I got to thank DJ Smith. He believed in me. And he was just a guy. We were in Owen Sound, and the trade deadline was coming up again. And at the time, we were overachieving, and they were trading away a couple guys to bolster up for the next year. So this would have been my second year in Windsor. They thought that we weren't going to be as good as we were. And DJ Smith taps me on the shoulder, and he goes, "Don't worry, son, I'll protect you," meaning that I wasn't going to get traded that year. And oh, boys, I was so happy to get just little blurb from him on the bench that he just believed in me as a player to stay. So actually after that, we went on to win the Memorial Cup that year and then the following year. And I actually truly believe that if I would have stayed in Windsor my fourth year, we would have had another great chance to win three in a row. They went to the conference final. But I mean, I ended up playing on the best team in the OHL that year, Mississauga, with Dave Cameron and a couple other guys that are still playing the game today, which, I mean, we are there too.
Yeah, you made it back. You made it to three straight Memorial Cups, which is an absolute crazy achievement.
Has anyone ever done that, or is that just you? I thought that was
the looking story. Back on it.
I don't know if anyone's ever done that before.
I think there was one guy that had won 3 Memorial Cups in a row. I think I would have been the second player ever to do it.
Okay, I remember the talk around, like, obviously I'm from Niagara Falls, you're from Niagara Falls, we're fucking related somehow too. I think our dads are cousins, actually, like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know, like, you know, that was just the buzz around town was, yeah, I remember there was something to do with it being a huge deal about the 3 Memorial Cups. Now, how often do you come back around here? Like, do you come back in the summer times, and what do you guys do here? Like, what do you do? Yeah, you go up to Shirkston or whatever with the boys, or what?
No, Paulie ended actually, he sold the place in Shirkston.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. To be honest, coming home for me for a long time, I was only home for 2 months, 3 months max. And really, you come home, you're off for a couple weeks, get with the boys, we start training again. And Monday to Friday, you end up working your tail off, playing some golf. My wife and I, we actually just bought a place in Port Dalhousie, so we're, we're calling that home now.
That's wicked, buddy.
Yeah, so just actually, I dislocated my shoulder May 2019 in the finals here in Germany. Funny little story about it. We were in game one in overtime, puck turns over, I go in from the bottom of the circle, I have like a little breakaway. I go to go backhand shelf off the goalie's knob, puck drops in front of me. I go to kick it with my skate and play it. I fall, get cross-checked from behind, dislocate my shoulder.
Oh.
And that was the longest time I had at home, actually, was rehabbing my shoulder. So it took me to get injured.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. Friggin', it's always a good time, though. Like, I imagine when you, like, anyone I know that leaves Niagara, like, it's usually like a better life in the end, but they always love coming back home to Niagara, like seeing the boys. There's a lot of fun shit to do around here. Like, I remember when you would come back in the OHL, I'd always see you at like Moose and Goose and places like that. Those were the old glory day spots. It's a little different now when you got a daughter now, you said, right? And that's awesome, man. Congratulations on that. Like, life just, it changes fast, eh?
Oh, you too, man. I didn't realize you had a little gaffer running around. Fuck.
Oh yeah, man, it's crazy. He's one now. He's got a nice long hockey hair mullet rocking right now. I'm not cutting his hair. He looks good, man. It's good stuff. It's a lot of fun, man. You know what it's like. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know what? Like you're saying, people that leave Niagara for a better life, 100% agree with you. But man, I got to tell you, when we come back, I've seen quite a bit of the world now through hockey, which is, you know, killing two birds with one stone over here in Europe, being able to see the world and play hockey. But I got to tell you, fuck, Niagara and Niagara on the Lake, it's a beautiful place to live. And whenever someone tells me they don't like living in that area, I just always shake my head. I'm like, are you present in your life? Because it is beautiful. It's fucking awesome place to live, man.
Yeah, like Doug McLean, I speak to him quite frequently. He was, he used to be the GM for the Blue Jackets and on Hockey Central. Man, like, he can't believe how people talk about Niagara that are from Niagara. He was just down here last weekend doing the wine tour, and he brings the RV down, and it's just, man, like, it's such a beautiful landscape. And I mean, you couldn't ask for more golf courses. Like, I won't even get a golf course membership here because there's so many good spots to play. Like, why would you stop yourself down to one fucking one course, you know? Fucking, I want to play them all.
You are right. I heard Grand Niagara might be closing, and they're going to be building homes there, so that'd be a huge disappointment for the public tracks.
Yeah, man, that's a tough one if that's the case, but everybody's putting up fucking condos in Niagara. It's a booming, like you said, it's a booming place now. It's a lot different from how it was as a kid, man, but it's cool, I guess, for you to be able to go around the world and have these experiences and live in the different parts of Europe. Where's your favorite spot that you've been in Europe, like all time? Where's like your favorite place to either go on the road or even like maybe a place you lived? Like where's your spot?
You know what? to live, it's got to be Munich, man. Like, that city is awesome. There's it's called the English Garden, and it runs parallel with the whole city. And it's actually, the German guys consider it nature's water park, because there's a stream that runs through it that you can jump in on one side. You float down the stream on a sunny day, and you can get picked up by the train and go back to the top of the park. And you can drink anywhere you want in Germany, right? You can drink on the street, you can drink anywhere, and people come there, they set up volleyball nets, you just ride a bike in, and people are selling beers there if you want beers. There's actually a naked part of the stream too, if you're into that.
So, you ever go down that part of the stream or what?
Floated down that part.
Oh yeah, 100%. You got to take a look and see what's going on. You got to investigate.
You got to get the full experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when the old dude's up to his knees and he's just got his schlong hanging out.
Yeah, old dudes, for some reason, like that generation, they just have no shame about their dong at all. Like, they'll just flop it. Like, you know what I'm talking about? You're at the gym or whatever in a change room, like you're putting your shoe on and some guy just will like whip his bag out like 5 inches from you. It's like, get the fuck back, buddy. Jeez, it must have been a different time back then. I don't know.
Just fucking liberated.
Yeah, it's the like pull your dong out generation, man. It's like the bra burning generation, but for those guys, it's just the whip your cock out generation. I love it. That's fucking hilarious. That must have so Munich is dope. I could imagine that. Did you ever do like an Oktoberfest while you were there?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we frequented them a couple times, actually, living in Munich. A couple of the main sponsors there at the tents are sponsors for the club. So we've been to a couple parties there. It's a great time, man. The German culture, they know what's going on, especially with beer. That's my favorite place to live. I'd say city favorite place to visit. It's got to be Austria. They do some great wellness there. Skiing's awesome in the winter time. Place called Sold in Austria. You can go up to these mountains into the summit. You'll ski for an hour and you'll hit like a cafe halfway down the mountain, and you'll just have a couple drinks and there'll be a party going on, and then you can ski back down the hill. It's a great time, man.
We brought up, I was about to ask Justin if he ever saw or felt unsafe being in Russia, because you know we all hear the stories there, and then my computer randomly tripped out and shut down. We're worried about election interference now, big time. Boys, are we all back here? Everybody's good?
Yeah.
Everybody's alive. Nobody's been poisoned or any shit like that yet.
Well, not that I know of.
Justin's here. Okay, good. So Justin, back to that question. You ever see anything like super crazy there, or like anything that made you feel like uncomfortable? I know the people there can smoke like 3 packs of darts a day, no problem, and it doesn't even affect them. But like, you ever see anything really crazy? That you can talk
depends
about
on who you are, but the first time I got on a plane there, we were flying to it's called Nivno Nivgorod. There's a team called Torpedo there, and we were playing a 5-game tournament, and it was just at the time when the Yak-42, the Russian aircraft, had they banned it for 5 years in the KHL. It was the one that crashed and it had killed that the whole team.
Locomotive or whatever. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. God bless all their souls. But so I get onto this plane, and it's the first time I go into the ass of the plane. Usually you don't walk on the tarmac and you go into the side of the plane to say hello, blah, blah, blah. But this is a chartered aircraft. You walk on the tarmac and the engines are just roaring, and you're going behind the engines into the ass of this thing. And you walk up and there's wood paneling everywhere. And I'm like, holy shit, this fucker's old. And we all sit down, and as we start moving, this like mist starts coming from underneath my seat. And I'm like, oh no.
Oh my God.
It's the oxygen, the cabin filling with oxygen, and you can see the oxygen. And I'm just sitting there, next to another import, Patrick Mullet at the time. And I'm like, man, like, I don't have a good feeling about this. Instantly Google the Act 42 and read it's supposed to be banned in the KHL. And here we are, first road trip, we're flying it.
They're like, yeah, don't worry, we're not ever going to put our players in those shitty planes again. And then just, you know, some time goes by, just get in the ass of the plane, shut up, it'll be fine. Wood paneling inside an aircraft? How fucking old are those? That's terrifying.
You know what? I think it had to be at least 30 or 40 years old. The funny part about the air, the funny part about the Act 42, man, it's actually one of the best aircrafts ever. Like, yeah, I guess the stats behind it, from the amount of times the aircraft has flown to land it, it's one of the best aircrafts actually in the world. So I guess there's a couple different stories behind why that plane had crashed in Russia. I don't know which one's accurate or right, but something went wrong there.
Yeah, something definitely went wrong. And then, like, yeah, you were like there not too long after that happened. So I'm sure there's some scary travel stuff. I don't even remember what player it was, but someone's wife had said like the league was the wild, wild west. Some people would get paid cash money. Was it ever like that? Or is that just some stuff to kind of slander the league? Like, you ever get paid in a brown paper bag or any shit like that?
No, I think those stories were pre-KHL when it was just called the Russian Super League.
Yeah.
So right when it turned KHL, I think they basically tried to shape it and try to create a sister league to the NHL. And they got up to, I think, 29 teams at one point. And I think they lost about 5 teams now. I think it's maybe around 24, 25. But a lot of good – man, there's a lot of good Russian players that just don't ever open the door to playing to North America. And I feel like in North America, there's a lot of guys that don't open the door to playing in Europe. But I will say, man, Russia, Moscow, St. Petersburg, there's some great places to live in Russia. I know that the propaganda about Russia can be pretty fucked up at times, but there's a lot of places that are great places to live. And then there's places, you know, like Novosibirsk or Magnitogorsk, some of these steel factory towns where the pollution is just out of this world. Life expectancy, I think, in Magnitogorsk is maybe 55, 56.
Oh, my God. So they're Yikes. Just pumping chemicals you know, into the environment. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like you get off and you're taking the bus into Magnitogorsk and you're looking at the sky and there's green, blue, purple. And you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, in Russia, they say climate changes you. So that's funny, man. That's crazy. Like, that's so cool that you've been over being able to play. What's the style like in the Denmark League? Like, is it like, what do you compare it to? Is it like a hard physical game? Is it more of a high-end speed game? What kind of hockey are you playing over there right now?
Right now in Denmark, it's, I'd say, the Danish style, I don't know if I can really say there is a style, because you got a couple different coaches here. There's North American coaches, Finnish coaches, Swedish coaches. I feel like it's a league that early on in Germany, say the DEL, the league is more than half North Americans. They have 9 imports a team plus a bunch of guys on German passports. And if you look, the league's basically 50 to 65% North American. And Denmark, I would say, is kind of following in the footsteps of the DL. It's not a very heavily marketed league here in Denmark, but you have other influences from other countries that are trying to help this country, this small country, only 5 million, kind of make it on a national stage, which is cool to be a part of here.
Yeah, man, that's excellent. That's excellent. Like, Jack, you're in Connecticut, right?
I'm in Maine.
You're in Maine. Sorry, yeah, you're in Maine. Jack's in Maine. Like, they got the coronavirus locked right down. You know what it's like in Niagara. It's like kind of was half locked down, half not locked down, depending on the time. How are things there when it comes to, like, COVID and shutdowns and stuff like that? Or is everything kind of operational as normal? Because, I mean, like you said, the population's so small.
What COVID?
They don't even have it there, eh? Like,
it's you know what, man? It's the only time you have to wear a mask here, funny enough, is when you enter a restaurant, you wear the mask into the restaurant and you sit down and then take your mask off. And it's like Canada, exact same as Canada, how you would use a mask in a restaurant. And then everywhere else, a mask does not exist.
So just in the restaurant.
That's it. I'm not sure why they chose the restaurant, not the grocery store. Or I can't even give you the answer, man. But that's COVID here. It's not very relevant. And to be honest, it's pretty awesome living here right now, not having to worry about it.
Yeah, man, I can only imagine. I'm so jealous. Like, everywhere you go now, like, I don't know. It weirds me out, man, seeing everybody. And I get why people are wearing them, but makes me, like, uneasy, especially, like, if I've hit my THC pen a couple times and I go into the fucking grocery store. It's just, like, everybody's looking at you with a mask, and you got a mask. Like, just thinking about where the world was last year at this time to now, I mean, holy shit. Like, it must be nice to have some sort of – it probably feels a lot more normal where you are. Like, to what we're accustomed to living like.
Yeah, I mean, that whole, what you're talking about, the mask on mask social, just image is, to us, I mean, we're not Asian, right? We're not used to it, so.
Yeah, like, and that is, like, a custom that they do in, like, Korea and China. Like, they just wear the mask out because there's a fucking zillion people there, right? Like.
Yeah, they're just that's what they're used to. And I don't know, is that something we're going to get used to as North Americans or the world? Maybe, I don't know, but
I hope not, man. I don't fucking like it. It makes me uneasy. Like, I'm cool with just, like, you know, there's germs out there. Like, I got an immune system. Like, let's figure it out and get some fucking fans back in. Like, and there's no capacity restrictions or anything in your league. Like, you can fill the box if you want to, or are they not allowed to fill the box?
They're not allowed to fill the barn. Each rink, depending, it doesn't even, I don't think it matters how many you hold. I think we're up to 500 seats, maybe 1500 depending on the building. But yeah, they never, what they did was they never shut down the Danish Soccer League, or actually handball's a big sport here in Denmark. And they never shut down any of these leagues, so they're just able to play. I know some leagues in Europe, they've done that. They've broken the rink up into four quadrants and basically treating each quadrant as its own arena. So if you enter one door, you can only stay in that quadrant of the rink. You can only use that concession, those toilets. So they're trying to make four venues out of one to have more people and contact tracing. I know they're doing that in Switzerland. And then Finland's up to, I think, 2,500 or 3,000 spectators. So, sports here are running. I don't know. I saw something on Instagram the other day, 65,000 fans in Miami. I'm not sure if that was true or false, but seems like the U.S. might be doing it too.
Yeah, Florida told the Miami Dolphins team that they could fill their stadium as much as they want. I think they elected not to, but yeah, like, it's full send to go in some parts of the United States, if I'm not mistaken, right, Jack? That would be more up your
alley. Yeah, Texas A&M, they had a ton of fans at their football game last week. So, yeah. I mean, certain places around the country, I mean, it's mostly state by state in the United States. So, like, whatever that governor says is the – there's no, like, national rule. So, if the governor lets them pack it, some places are packing. And you heard a Florida coach the other day. He now has COVID, of course. But he said he wanted them to pack the swamp, which is the Florida Gators place. So.
Yeah, he's like, I might have got COVID from hanging out with people, but fucking pack it anyway. Let's go. Like, yeah, that's the mentality down there.
The lightning out, Jack, there. Are they doing the herd immunity?
I don't think that's what they're trying to do. I think it's just Florida, and they just want to live their life and pretend like COVID's not happening. But not sure it's the best strategy.
It might be, though. Like, it might be just like everybody's going to get it. And, like, if you make it, you make it. And if you don't, you don't. Like, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, for most people, it's like hardly even the flu. Like, you know, I mean, I get both sides of it. I get where, you know, you don't want to kill your grandma and shit like that. But it's like, man, I want to get back to, like, watching sports. Like, I liked the NHL's return to play. How much of that did you get to check out? And, like, I mean, I think they did a pretty good job, but it's just not the same atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, talking to a few guys in the bubble, it wasn't a great place to be. Especially something, you know, now having a little guy, for some guys that I know now that have new families, it wasn't easy, right?
No, not at all, man. That's a tough ask.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if the bubble is going to work for them in the new year. I know there's talks of it in the NHL having bubbles. I don't know if they can work. But sports in general, man, like hockey around the world, I don't know what the landscape's going to look like, how many teams are going to go bankrupt. I know we're used to revenue sharing in the NHL. So you do see that escrow, which, you know, players are really going to get hosed with over the next 4 years, I think they agreed on. But you don't have revenue sharing here in Europe or Russia. So, you know, the bottom club that has sponsors and doesn't have a main owner, they're not getting the same money that, you know, the Arizona Coyotes are getting from the league, which is going to help them stay in the league. Right. So I don't know what the landscape's going to look like for some of these smaller budget clubs around Europe that, you know, don't have that help from the league. Maybe they end up doing revenue sharing, or they find a union here. Who knows? Like I said, it's the wild, wild west, but the landscape's going to look a lot different. That's for sure.
Fuck, that's crazy, man, to even think about it. Yeah, because there's so many small cities that have teams and shit like that, and they probably have, like, their shit probably gets paid for by, like, the local brewery, and if they've taken a hit, they're not going to be forking out cash. That's fucking – it's too bad, man. It's crazy to see all these businesses and shit around the world close, too, like – and it's, like, fucked up because, like, somehow all, like, Amazons and shit like that, like, they're doing great. Like, we were all just home, locked up, buying shit from them. Like, fucking
yeah, they're killing it.
Sad to see, man, for the small businesses. And, like, even talking about the OHL, did you see, Justin, that they want to have them come back and not let them body check because of COVID?
Yeah, I was talking to Rocco Tullio, the owner of the Oshawa Generals, and he was kind of giving me the lowdown on what's happening in the league. And it's just, I don't know if you call it foolish or just not understanding the game, but to take away body checking or to think that you're going to be able to eliminate that from a contact sport because of COVID, I don't know how that's possible. I don't
it's
know
not.
How you can ask
like,
that.
You're
going to players.
Tell me that a guy's
obviously
not going to get pissed?
Yeah, I think we can call it foolish.
Yeah, it's garbage. You know, that's fucking trash. What a trash idea that is. Just test the kids all the time, man. Like, you're going to have to live with it. But to, like, no body checking. And then what? In 2 years, they got to go to the NHL and get fucking killed because they forget how to take a hit or whatever. Like, that seems like it's going
to
cause a lot more.
Reeves.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. Like, that sounds, like, dangerous as fuck to me.
It's almost, Jack, I don't know if you're Canadian or not, but, like Christian knows, for some reason, we thought it was a good idea in Canada to hand out a participant medal to younger kids and not actually give them, you know, a first place ribbon or a medal, and now younger kids aren't playing for anything. They're just all playing to be a part of the sport.
Yeah, and, instead of playing to win, exactly. It's killing that edge. And,
oh, it's just killing that competitive edge. Like, you don't think the kids know what the score is, and then they go home in the car and say, hey, Dad, we won the game, and they came home with a participant medal. Like, kids are smarter than we think. Like, just having a little girl who's 3 months, you see how smart they can be, and after seeing what whoever thought that was a good idea for young toddlers and kids to grow up with, I think it's a shame for any sport, and I think it's a shame especially for the kids.
Yeah, I mean, we do a little bit of that in the States here too. I'm not Canadian. I'm originally from right outside of Boston, but yeah, I mean, there's got to be competitive factor and expect it to be the same result. And kids learn a lesson. You learn from losing. Like that's how you get some of your best lessons in life is from failure.
Yeah. Amen. And no one's allowed to fail anymore because everyone's a winner. What a time to be alive. It's fucking weird, man. And now, like, and it's like you're talking about the OHL. Like, these kids are now, like, especially the guys who are going into their final years, their overage years. Like, they've been playing contact hockey their whole life. And then you're just going to all of a sudden expect them not to throw a body check in a playoff game. Like, that's just so unbelievably stupid. Like, that makes no
sense. Dangerous. Sense.
Yeah, and then they're going to go off to the NHL, and it's like, okay, buddy, go into the fucking corner with anybody that's physical, and you're going to get fucking smacked. Like, that sounds it sounds dangerous to me, man. Like, go into the corner with
– Go play against Tom Wilson now.
Tom Wilson, exactly. Fuck. Yeah, go into the corner with that guy. You haven't hit in 3 years. Good luck. You're going to be dead.
Is it what about the OHL and the rule about the bubble, the face shield?
Yeah, they have to wear like a full on. It's like, oh, isn't it like a face shield that has like almost like what looks like a mask built in?
I saw a prototype.
It looks fucking weird, man. Like I can't imagine how that's gonna fog up like crazy. No.
I've never been a bubble guy per se in hockey. I know there's guys in NCAA that have worn it, but aren't there a couple younger studs that have been drafted high now to the NHL that are kind of trying to bring the bubble look back in the OHL?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched as much OHL hockey. Like, it's been a few years since I really busted it.
To be honest, I think there's a couple guys like that are trying to make it before this had happened, before COVID. They were starting the year off with a bubble. These guys were, I don't know if I'm way off here. It could be one player or it could be a handful. I don't know. But I think that there's a couple guys that were trying to basically say like, hey, I'm wearing a bubble. I'm the best.
Wow, that's weird as hell. I remember a time where if you even wore like a shield, you were considered a Sally. But whatever, I guess that's the way things are now. And I guess when you grow up in that everyone's a winner environment, you can make a bubble cool now. I personally wouldn't rock a bubble to save my life, but I guess times have changed and things are different. But buddy, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. We appreciate you dropping by. We had some crazy Russian interference in this podcast, telling old KHL stories. So that's good, bud. But we'll definitely kick in with you a bit this year and see how life's going over in Denmark.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.